Here on Newsnight, President Akufo-Addo appoints COP Christian Tetteyohuno as Deputy IGP in charge of operations. We have details and reactions. Also tonight, the Auditor General indicts scores of school feeding caterers for feeding thousands of pupils in basic schools with unwholesome meals, including serving them with food containing pebbles, worms, and weevils.
The time they were paying 97 pesos, rice were selling 140 Ghana cedis, 180 Ghana cedis. But now, rice is 700 cedis. So we are trying our best.
Is that the reason why the quality of food is not the best in some schools?
The quality, we manage it a small way of quality.
We have details for you.
Also tonight, the anti-LGBTQ bill will remain in Parliament a bit longer as the Supreme Court defers its ruling on an interlocutory application aimed at preventing Parliament from transmitting the bill to the President.
The decision of this court on this application for an interlocutory injunction is hereby deferred to abide the outcome of the determination of the substantive suit.
We have details as the Attorney General says the court has been fair in arriving at his decision to defer the ruling. Also tonight, latest Afrobarometer report, a significant decline in Ghana's democracy as it attributes it to economic crisis, mismanagement and corruption, sparking outrage among citizens.
Some of the countries like Ghana, we've seen a huge drop in satisfaction with democracy. The economic situation in Ghana in recent years has not been particularly great. You know, the youth have, as I've already said, like their colleagues elsewhere, are not happy with the amount of jobs that are being created.
We'll get to hear from the former chairman of Malawi's Electoral Commission advising Ghana's Electoral Commission to heed the findings and maintain its credibility to prevent chaos in the lead up to the 2024 elections.
As election management body, it's always important to remember that credibility is very important.
In business, pickup in VAT collections contributed significantly in Ghana Revenue Authority hitting half-year target of almost 68 billion cedis.
And in sports, Ghana's members of parliament cut former professional Black Stars players to size with 3-1 in the curtain raiser match for the maiden edition of the Democracy Cup, with MPs showing they are not just lawmakers.
We have details of that in tonight's edition of Newsnight. You want to join us with your thoughts, your comment is via WhatsApp 055-111-1997. We are live on X Spaces. You can leave a comment there with the hashtag Newsnight. I am Emefa Apau.
And my name is Evans Benson. We start tonight with our breaking news from the presidency with a statement that has just been issued appointing a deputy IGP. Emefa, what are the details?
So the statement is signed by the Director of Communications Office of the President, Eugene Ahin, and it's captioned, President Akufo-Addo appoint IGP, COP, I beg your pardon, Christian Tetteyohuno as Deputy IGP in charge of operations. It goes on to say, I'll read verbatim what the statement says, Evans. It says, the President of the Republic, Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo, has appointed Commissioner of Police, COP, Mr. Christian Tetteyohuno, as the new Deputy Inspector General of Police in charge of operations. This appointment is pursuant to the advice of the Police Council at its meeting held today, Wednesday, 17th July 2024, during which COP Yohunu's exceptional credentials and dedication to duty were acknowledged. COP Christian Tetteyohuno is a distinguished law enforcement officer with a career spanning over 3 decades and has held various key positions within the Ghana Police Service. President Akufo-Addo extends his heartfelt congratulations to COP Christian Tetteyohuno on his well-deserved appointment and wishes him the very best in the discipline of or discharge of his duties.
So if you're just joining us, a statement from the presidency there appointing a deputy IGP in charge of operations. I want to bring in right now former Deputy Interior Minister. He's also right now the ranking member on the Defense and Interior Committee. James Agaga joins us on the line. Also joining me is Security Analyst and Chief Executive Officer of the Security Warehouse Limited, Adam Bonner, also joins us right now. Put it in context, this is coming some 4 months to a major elections, and I want to get your thoughts on these the change that has just happened there with addition of Mr. Yohuno, who have been there already and has been doing some work now as a Deputy IGP. Mr. Agaga, first to you, you were Deputy Interior Minister, you're ranking now. Good move?
Well, the police service has always had the position of Deputy Inspector General of Police as one of the topmost positions
that any government would want to feel. Fortunately, for some time now, that position has been left vacant. And so if the president has decided that he's filling that vacancy, in principle, I don't think there is anything wrong with that. In any case, who is COP Yohunu? COP Yohunu, for a very long time, was the second in command after the Inspector General of Police. So anytime you saw GP2, GP2 was synonymous to Christian Tete Yohunu, because he was second in command. And therefore, nothing has changed dramatically. The only suspicion I have is that listening to what you read out, the wording of Tete Yohunu's appointment suggests that he's going to be Deputy Inspector General of Police in charge of operations. Is that to say that we're going to have yet another appointment in charge of administration, or what? What I do know, and what the position has always been, is that we've had one slot reserved for a Deputy Inspector General of Police. And so I thought the wording of that letter would have been that, okay, he's Deputy Inspector General of Police, simple and straightforward. But we say he's Deputy Inspector General of Police in charge of operations could mean that we may have a second appointment. If a second appointment is made, to occupy the position of Deputy Inspector General of Police in addition to Christian Yohunu's appointment, that would be problematic for me, Evan.
So when it says in charge of operations, does that tie the hands of the current IGP to have supervisory jurisdiction over operations, for example?
Not necessarily, except that if he say his deputy in charge of operation, I mean, he would work up to the IGP. But the fundamental question is, are we going to see yet another appointment of a deputy IGP responsible for administration, or what? If not, it was unnecessary to say he's Deputy Inspector General of Police in charge of operations. That is my worry. Because what I do know is that the position of Deputy IGP is one slot. In the past, we've had some people occupy that position before. I think Mills Robinson was Deputy Inspector General of Police. The former Inspector General of Police, IGP Alasan, was once upon a time a Deputy Inspector General of Police. But on occasion, I can remember Dr. Mafu, he was also Deputy Inspector General of Police. They did not share the position with others. That is why I am a bit curious as to whether the president, by the letter issued in his name, intends to appoint yet another commissioner to serve as another Deputy Inspector General of Police in addition to Christian Yohunu. That said, I should congratulate Christian Tete Yohunu. I mean, he's a seasoned police officer. He's acquitted himself very well. I think at some point he was even given the order of the Star of Volta or so. I don't quite remember the appropriate title of that award. It was a national award. I mean, in recognition of the sacrifices and hard work he had actually put up.
Stay with me. I want to bring in Adam Bona into the conversation. Adam Bona, you've watched the police service very closely. I remember having a conversation with you years back when we were thinking about who becomes the next IGP, and you had the list of individuals, and Mr. Yohunu was one of them. What's your comment on the change that has happened tonight in terms of his moving up to become a deputy IGP?
Well, just like my brother, Honorable Agaga, said, usually you have deputy IGPs in Plesetta. You don't have deputy IGP in charge of operations, because then you have director general operations within the Ghana Police Service. And remember, COP Let me congratulate him, just like my brother Agaga did. He's a fine police officer. He was one of the people who we did our survey some time ago, you know, when the position of IGP was vacant. And so, I mean, we can't take that away from him. He's a very disciplined police officer, and we expect that he would do as he's been doing. He's already the GP2. If you look at their hierarchy, he drives, he's the GP2 and he performs deputy IGP functions, even though maybe within the political sphere or the executive, it is not official. But within the police ranks, he's a deputy IGP, if you ask me. But like Honorable Agaga said, if you say in charge of operations, what's the meaning of in charge of operations? It's something that they should have explained to us, because then the most recent deputy IGP was Opon Buenu. Opon Buenu was deputy IGP to Asante Apiatu. And he was, you can go back to his appointment letter, he was deputy IGP Simplicita. And so, are we now going to have maybe not one, but several deputy IGPs? Deputy IGP maybe in charge of finance, deputy IGP in charge of admin, in charge of services. Is that what we are going to see? And so mine is that already Your Honor, the good thing is I was performing that function or the functions as the function of a deputy IGP. But call it 4 months into an election for every democracy like ours, usually the top hierarchy of the security architecture is usually not tempered with. It's something that we should know. It's a convention. It's not usually, because once you begin to temper with it, it brings about a lot of suspicion. It brings about, you know, people beginning to read meanings into it and asking questions. And so
And tonight, considering the
to do that.
Yes, it is. And considering what has happened recently, and you know the police itself was forced to issue a statement to deny exactly. reports that the IGP had been removed. The timing of this has come up and raised a few eyebrows. I'm saying, well, you have a deputy IGP, yes, qualified, but with a specific responsibility of being in charge of operations. And the questions are being raised about the disappointment at this time, on the back of the police itself dealing with rumors of the IGP being undermined. Does this play into that?
Well, it does. I mean, I'm on several platforms, and already people are saying, is this, you know, a way to ask the oust the IGP? I mean, and what I say is that I doubt this is going, because then no president will do that, or no leader will do that 4 months into an election, because that would be catastrophic. If any president attempted to do that, that would still, there would be a lot of, I don't think so. Your COP, Your Honor, we can't take that away from him. He's a fine police officer, COP, very disciplined. Those, I know him. I've worked closely with him in the past. And so I can say he's a very fine police officer. But like I'm saying, the timing is the thing. What is it? But like I said, the convention all over the world, you don't tamper with any security architecture usually 6 months into election.
And on that point,
do that before he lost the election, and his advisors asked him not to do it.
And on that point, let me bring in Mr. Agaga on that. Mr. Agaga, what's your comment on the timing?
Well, I have stated the fact that, look, all along we've always had the GP2, and the GP2 is the second in command after the IGP. And so if the idea is to make the position official by filling the vacuum that has been left for quite some time, there is nothing wrong with that. But I am curious that the designation of COP Your Honor as Deputy Inspector General of Police in charge of operations.
What makes you curious?
Like my brother Adam Bona has stated, are we going to see yet another appointment of a Deputy IGP responsible for finance, administration, HR or what? If that were the case, we would have distorted the hierarchical organization.
But also
Ms. Agaga, all along we've had the IGP as number one, deputy IGP number two, and the commissioners.
But also, Ms. Agaga, you've been the deputy interior minister before. Don't we already have a director general responsible for operations in the police service currently?
Yes, we do have a director general who is a commissioner and is responsible for operations.
In that sense, then, what now happens when you have a DG, a deputy IGP, who is now also in charge of operations?
Well, that is why I would have thought that the appointment would come without any qualification, so that in the absence of the IGP, the Deputy Inspector General of Police would perform his functions. But now the way it is, I can foresee the president appointing another person as an IGP. But that would create problems, because we haven't had that before. It would mean that the entire hierarchy of the police service would have to be reorganized. That would be something new.
Mr. Bona, you were making a comment on the existing role. We have a director general responsible for operations. Now we have a deputy IGP who is also going to be in charge of operations.
Well, usually, as far as even with the order of on their role, or their role call, the IGP is technically in charge of everything, and then you have those who are specifically asked to do maybe services and the like, HR and the like. And in the absence of the IGP, then the deputy steps in and performs that role. But now we have a deputy IGP in charge of operations. Does that mean the DG operations will go comatose? We won't have any work to do? Are we going to have several other deputy IGPs? I don't want to believe so. I don't want to think so, but it's only time that will tell. It's just that the timing, if you ask me, every person who, security watcher, political watchers, will be asking the same questions. Why do this 4 months into, a high-tension elections, when the EC boss is actually saying that today, I think she did a press conference saying whoever loses the elections must accept, and the political commentators are arguing all over the place. So I think that whatever is done around this time, the president, the executive would have to be very careful so that we don't have a Kenya-style chaos in this country. We need to be very measured in what we are doing, because then I don't think, and today, a survey that has been conducted says that a majority of the young people, 53 or so, on the continent have never seen coup before, and so they think military rule is an option to this type of democracy. So I don't think that the timing is very good, if you ask me, in terms of these things. So the president would have to be very measured in whatever decisions is taken from now on in terms of our security architecture.
Yeah, and Mr. Gaga, talking about the IGP, that leaked tape report that was a subject of your committee's work isn't complete, is it? I mean, from what we heard from the floor of parliament, the speaker has asked that this returns for you to do some more work on this. Where are you with completing it for the House to take a final decision?
Oh, Evans, the report was subsequently debated thoroughly and adopted by the House. So the committee's work is complete. Its report has been adopted by the House, and the speaker ordered that a copy of the report be served on the president for his urgent attention and action.
So in there, you expect the recommendations that you make to be carried and enforced. And I note you obviously raise issues about the individuals who had plotted, and that's a conspiracy that you established. You're expecting the president to carry out those findings and recommendations?
Absolutely, Evans. The conspiracy against the current IGP was established beyond doubt, that COP Mensa Superintendent Asari and Jebi had conspired to remove him in order to allow for the breaking of the eight. But most fundamentally, Evans, the report made far-reaching recommendations aimed at ensuring that the management of election security, which is actually a role that the police must play, I mean, they play a lead role, you know, ought to be handled in a manner that would ensure that the forthcoming elections are free, transparent, and fair. Very important recommendation, and I think that given that we are in an election year, the president would want to have a critical look at that particular recommendation.
You're confident that he will?
Well, if he doesn't, that would be a shame. And if he doesn't, it would mean that the president has no respect for the legislative arm of government, which could result in his removal or impeachment from office. Because remember that the legislative arm of government, I mean, is established under the Constitution. And now, as president, he has sworn an oath to protect the laws of the country and, most importantly, the Constitution. So the president must demonstrate that he believes in the rule of law, he respects the Constitution, which created the arm of government called the legislature.
And that there is James Agaga, ranking member of the Defense and Interior Committee. Adan Bona is a security analyst, executive of the Security Warehouse Limited. And if you're just joining us, a deputy IGP has just been appointed. He was currently already, as we've just heard from both the former deputy interior minister and Adan Bona, driving a GP2. And he's currently now the deputy IGP, Christian Tetayonu, COP. And the decision was taken after police council meeting today and has been communicated from the president.
Well, let's do some of the stories now. And the Auditor General, Johnson Ikwemwa, has revealed that the scores of school feeding caterers in five regions fed thousands of pupils in basic schools with unwholesome meals. In the Upper East and Greater Accra regions, for instance, auditors found that caterers at different occasions served rice that had pebbles in it and beans infested with worms and weevils. They also added that food colour, and they add food colour to the jollof rice, contrary to requirement in the National Operations Manual. While in the Auditor General's latest performance audit on the school feeding program, the Auditor General also found out that food served by the cooks were not adequate to sustain their pupils through the instructional period or school days. Well, my colleague James Savage has a copy of that particular report by the Auditor General. James, first, walk us through what the Auditor General actually found with regard to the poor quality of food served pupils across the country.
MFA, so according to the report, 58 caterers out of some 245 schools the auditors sampled across five regions provided poor quality meals for the pupils. For instance, caterers in 21 out of 73 schools in the Greater Accra region and one out of 22 schools in the Western region provided poor quality food for the pupils. In the Upper East region, in August 2022, a head teacher tool indicated that the caterer for the Zoa Primary School in the Nabdan district at different occasions served rice that had pebbles in it. It has beans. The beans were infested with worms and weevils, and what she served was without delicious stew attached to it. Then another specific in the Greater Accra region says that in July 2021, Zona Coordinator's monitoring report showed that the caterer for 5th Battalion A Primary School added food color to the jollof rice, contrary to the requirement of the National Operations Manual. Now, according to the head teachers of the schools the auditors visited, the caterers used unwholesome food items and did not add adequate protein to the meals for the children.
The issue about quantity also came up in terms of whether the children are actually being fed the right quantity. What did the report find?
Exactly. So, in that report, there is a tool they called the handy measure tool, which every caterer is supposed to use to measure the quantity of food that's supposed to be used to serve the children. But the auditors found out that some caterers do not have this tool, and even those who have it are not using it. To some specifics, they observed that during their visit to the schools, food served by the
cooks were not adequate to sustain the children through the instructional hours. For instance, at the Madina Estate MA 1 Primary School in the Greater Accra region, they noted that wache prepared by the caterer was not adequate for 188 pupils. Now, the quantity is supposed to be 16-liter food warmers. That's supposed to feed 188, but only one 16-liter was provided. So half of that was used to feed the entire number. Then another specific was on some amount of monies that have been wrongly paid. 2.3 million Ghana cedis was wrongly paid, which the Auditor General is asking the National Secretariat to retrieve between 2019 and 2022. Now, there's a breakdown. There's an overpaid 9 caterers totaling 136.5 thousand Ghana cedis, which 83,000 cedis have been retrieved, leaving some 53,000 outstanding. Now, the National Secretariat also overpaid a total amount of 176.1 thousand Ghana cedis to some 14 caterers. Finally, there is over 800,000 Ghana cedis, which is unaccounted for, which are monies accrued from forms sold to persons who are interested to be caterers for schools. They bought the forms, but the National Secretariat have not been able to account for 861,000 Ghana cedis of those form fees. All of that are some irregularities they have put out there in that report.
So that's another leg that we'll be exploring further, apart from the unwholesome meals that are served the children, also the irregularities about payment from the school feeding program. But you have a response from the Secretariat on this, at least. It's in the report. What do they say?
They're indicating that management of the Secretariat is saying that in one of their reconciliations, they overpaid a certain group of caterers. This is was later deducted from their payment in subsequent term payment. This deduction was to the tune of 655,511 Ghana cedis. They said they'll be grateful if they actually assist them to assess the source of the document in difference of the overpayment observation in order to carry out further work on it. Other than that, they will bring to the attention of those deductions to look at in the subsequent. The recommendation relating to non-cooking days is noted deductions will be made in the second term of 2023. And so that's the feedback to the overpayment as well as the issue about
and this was captured in the report in terms of the response of the school feeding program to all the concerns that were raised by the Auditor General, the unwholesome meals, and of course the overpayment that was made to the school feeding and some of the caterers. And these are some of the issues captured in the Auditor General's report.
Thankfully, we can speak to Dorothy Ofori-Sapon, Secretary of Ashanti Regional School Feeding Caterers. Also joining me is Clement Apak, Deputy Ranking on the Education Committee. Dorothy, thanks for time here on Newsnight. Hello, Dorothy, can you hear me? Okay, we don't seem to have Dorothy's attention, but we have Clement Apak with us. Hello, Mr. Apak.
Yes, I'm here. Good evening to our listeners, particularly my constituents in Bursa South.
Great to have you. I have Dorothy now. Hello, Dorothy.
Hello.
Hi, Dorothy. Great to have you. Dorothy, why are your members serving unwholesome food to children in schools?
Thank you very much, and good evening to you and your audience. My dear, it is never true, but then if you are saying that the quantity of the food is not enough, then one, I would agree with you 100%.
Well, the Auditor General says the quantity is not enough, but I also found that unwholesome food served to the children, including foods that had pebbles in it and weevils as well.
Oh, that is why I'm saying that with that aspect, I'm afraid, because I'm also a mother. And whatever food I cook, I also bring some home for my children to eat. So that one, I don't even understand. Because one, all the type of food that we cook for them, they enjoy it. Even the teachers, when you finish, they'll rather bring their bowls first. And so I wonder why they are saying that unwholesome food. I wonder. I don't even understand. Maybe it might be 1 out of 1,000, but for the women in general to cook unwholesome food, I'm afraid.
Well, it's not 1 out of 1,000. I mean, for example, in the Greater Accra region, when the Auditor General sampled, and this is evidence they gathered, caterers in 21 of 73 schools in the Greater Accra region, one of 22 schools in the Western region, provided poor quality food for the pupils.
So what type of food was that described as poor?
Well, poor because it had pebbles in it. Some of them had worms and weevils. In fact, in Jollof, they were adding color to the rice.
Oh, really?
Well, that's the evidence.
I'm sorry, because that one, I've never experienced some before, so I don't know. But we know that because of the price of the food, we don't use enough ingredients to do it. For instance, if we have to use about maybe 50 cedis onion, we'll use about 20 or 30. Because the ingredients, they are all very expensive. And if you are going to use tomato soup and you have to use maybe two tins of tomato, you use one. And so you not get the fairness of the rice. But using color, for me, no, out.
Dr. Clemente Park, you're hearing the Ashanti Regional Secretary of the caterers, and making the point that she's not aware that this is happening. But this is the Auditor General's report. And this is evidence that has been gathered. We'll surely be coming to Parliament, the Public Accounts Committee. What's your reaction? But most importantly, what must be done to deal with this?
Well, Evans, let me say good evening to you again. And to commend the Auditor General for doing the performance audit on the school feeding program. It is my prayer that the same will be done in terms of the feeding arrangements for our wards in the secondary school system. But let me say that I am not surprised about the findings as captured in the Auditor General's report. Whilst my sister speaking from Kumasi may be doing the right thing under very strenuous circumstances, it is also the case that we get reports, and I've received some of those reports. I know firsthand that indeed this is the situation in some of the schools. So I think what we ought to be looking at is to look at the issue holistically. One factor that may contribute to some unscrupulous caterers, in fact, serving our wards with poison rather than food, could be the very meager amount that government has chosen to pay them to feed a child per day. Remember that until recently, it was 99 pesos per child per day. After a protest by the school feeding caterers, supported by many advocates, including myself, we were hoping that government would have at least increased it to about 3 cedis 50 pesos or 4 cedis. Eventually, the government told us that it had increased it from the 99 pesos to 1 cedi 20 pesos. Even in this economy, for the past 2 to 3 years, can 1 cedi 20 pesos even feed a pet cat, let alone be sufficient enough to feed a child of school-going age? The other issue that I think is exciting about this expose is the fact that monies have been paid to persons who clearly have not fed students in any school. And that reaffirms the long-standing suspicion that the school feeding program has become a conduit for some unscrupulous public servants and their cronies to siphon public resources for purposes other than what the monies are supposed to be used for.
And from where you sit, in the interest of time, specifically as a member of parliament, also on the committee responsible for education, what do you plan to do about this?
Well, because it's an audit report, it clearly will be tabled and the speaker will refer it to the Public Accounts Committee. And I believe the Public Accounts Committee will then invite the sector minister. This will be the Minister for Gender, Children and Social Protection. And the minister would consequentially also invite the person in charge of the school feeding program to appear before the Public Accounts Committee at a certain day and time to be determined by the committee to respond to all of these red flags that have been raised.
Thank you very much. And that there is Clementa Park, Dr. Clementa Park, the deputy ranking on the education committee. For those of us who went to Saito, this is something we're very familiar with. But one CD, 20 pesos. I mean, if our power is a mother, maybe she can do some magic with that.
Nothing you can do about it.
With one CD, 20 pesos?
What can you do with it?
Oh, you, can,
you can't do anything with it, really. You can't do anything. I'm surprised that Dorothy's saying that they feed the children with good food. But honestly, really, if you look at some of the food that they feed these children with, it's something that you can't even give to your pets. Honestly, your we pet need to cat. Do something. They can't yes, even
Agaga
eat it.
Agaga said you can your pet cat.
Yeah. Pet cat, no.
Even the cats, they I know. They
even the cats will reject the food. Honestly, honestly. It's sad.
I want to hear from you. 055-111-1997 is the WhatsApp line. We have a child in school and you're hearing now that you're being served with weevil infested food. Worms as well, MFAPA. Worms as well. And the jollof, and she explains it, this tomato is expensive. So if you want a great color for the jollof to be appetizing, then you have to add some color to it. That's
just
poison.
Just do angwamu for them. You have to do jollof fries by force.
That's absolutely true. Angwamu with some shito and maybe one fried egg.
Pepe is the best.
Yeah. Oh. Anyway, let's hear from you on that and here on Newsnight. George Affairs here. George, this is something that you never experienced. I'm pretty sure of that.
He doesn't know what we are talking about.
He has no idea
what we are talking about. In situations, I don't know. I mean, the fact is that yes, there are students out there. Mm-hmm. You don't need to experience it before you know that it is bad.
It is terrible. Yes. What do you have in the headlines?
Well, coming up, pick up in VAT collections plays a significant role in helping Ghana Revenue Authority to hit a year target of 68 billion Ghana cedis. And government affirms commitment in securing strategic partner to help turn around the dwindling fortunes of Tema Oil Refinery. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business. Kingdom Books and Stationery, Synthes Tanks and Pepsodent, Herbal and Charcoal.
Son, we are so proud of you for setting up this hospital. I really love those hospital beds and waiting chairs. By the way, did you import them?
No, Dad, I didn't. I actually got them from Kindle Books and Stationery right here in Ghana.
Wow. We also bought our office supplies, safes, executive desks and chairs from Kingdom, and they gave us expert advice on how to set up our office.
Guys, that makes three of us. I also got our sofa and bedroom sets, plus our dining hall furniture for our new home from Kingdom.
Wow, Mom, that makes four of us. I usually get my stationery items from Kingdom. And my teacher also mentioned that our classroom furniture was provided by Kingdom.
So there you have it. Whenever you're thinking about setting up an office or acquiring furniture for your home, etc., Kingdom Books and Stationery should be your first point of call. With over 40 years' experience in the industry, we stock and supply a wide variety of globally sourced office and home furniture, stationery and equipment. Visit our head office, Osu Akwaje, or our office near the Osu Stadium. We're also in Tema Community 1, opposite Olam SHF, Kumasi KNUSD Campus, UCC, Cape Coast, and now at the Marina Mall, Airport City. Or call us 0302-764101, 764209, or 762792. Visit our website, www.kingdomgh.com. You
believe, and hey, so as for you, every day you are just pressing your phone. Why? Are they paying you?
They are, Omar.
Eh?
The more I use my MTN, the more points I get. And I can use those points to get airtime, data, and even discounts at shops and restaurants.
Hey, so that is why all of you are always pressing your phones. And you won't tell us, so that way too we can enjoy some.
Oh, Omar.
There's always more to enjoy with MTN Rewards. Just keep talking, testing, and browsing all day, every day to collect your points and use it to redeem amazing offers and discounted freebies. Right away, there's so much available for you. So dial *550# and get your reward today. Let's go everywhere you go.
We have a new leader in town, OBRNTA. Amanfo, me don't want to see when you say my baby, maybe mom more charcoal for whiter teeth.
More charcoal.
Not only that, maybe mom lemon.
More lemon.
Zinc for fresher breath.
More zinc.
And fluoride for stronger teeth. Hey,
yeah, 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 yeah. Introducing the new President Charcoal packed with more power with a combination of charcoal and lemon for naturally whiter teeth. Grab yours now. This advert is FDA approved.
The luckiest
*712#.
Luck is everywhere for everyone, yeah.
When
coma and non fufua. A dialing *712# hash and found no regrets. A side coma investors are a striking gold. A coma health workers are a diagnosis lack with precision. A side coma that tough guy who couldn't hold back his tears. They say a coma passionate farmer or also entering containing a joy. A fair to the seamstress or turning a hard end stitches into a bundle of happiness. And now, a coma, if you say your next big win is right here.
*712# and join the luckiest winning celebration. From the 1st of July 2024, dial *712# to keep buying tickets as a group, individual, or even as a community. Win loads of cash and prizes in the community draw or go for the grand draw on the 30th of November 2024. Unlock your luck with *712#. Join the winning streak now.
The luckiest
*712#.
Luck is everywhere for everyone, yeah. The luckiest.
Welcome back to Business on Newsnight. Now, strong pickup in VAT collections from April this year and other initiatives helped the Ghana Revenue Authority to hit its half-year target of 68 billion Ghana cedis. The authority, for instance, maintained that the rollout of its electronic VAT invoicing system also played a major role in bringing on board new taxpayers. The Ghana Revenue Authority is looking at moving away from enforcement-centered approach to more of collaborative partner approach with business and other taxpayers out there. Meanwhile, economist Dr. Edu Sakwadie is optimistic that the Ghana Revenue Authority will hit its end-of-year target based on some of these measures implemented in the first half of this year.
It also shows that we are on course with the fiscal consolidation program that we have, because the more revenue we get, the lower will be the gap between the revenue and expenditure if we keep expenditure constant. And also, you also recall that 2 years ago, Ghana was downgraded. And one of the reasons was that we could not pass the revenue measures in our budget. And therefore, the creditors were not sure that the government of Ghana would be able to mobilize enough resources to service their debt. So if GRA is making this progress, it is something good and that we must celebrate and also tell them to do more and be on track. But my question has always been that, what kind of optimal target did they set for themselves? I'm yet to interrogate the data because you must set an optimal target. And then if you exceed it, then you know that you're really on course. So,
economist Dr. Edu Sakwadie. Now, government has given the firm assurance that it remains committed to securing a strategic partner to help turn around the dwindling fortunes of Tema Oil Refinery. It follows concerns that government hasn't shown much concern in dealing with the issues of the firm, but the Minister of State at the Energy Ministry, Bakrampa, maintained that the Tema Oil Refinery should also look at some interim partnership and working to bring other investors on board.
Need an external partner, a strategic partner, as they call it. They have tried in the past to do so, albeit unsuccessfully. My thinking is that the ministry, continuing to work with the Ministry of Finance, should continue to work with TOR to bring in this strategic investment. I think also, as we know, a private refinery called Centio, which has been set up, has a capacity of 100,000 barrels per day, currently doing 40,000 barrels. I see nothing wrong with some form of partnership between TOR and Centio. TOR has the facilities and the capacity. Centio is currently producing. I believe a conversation can be opened for both institutions to dialogue about some form of partnership, which I suspect helps TOR to itself start to generate more some funding, and then also we help them with the conversation about a strategic partner.
Herbert Krapa is the Minister of State at the Energy Ministry. Now, some offshore investors are still skeptical about government exercising fiscal discipline in the roundup to the December elections. Now, this despite promises from government that it will maintain the needed fiscal prudence in the run-up to the elections. The IMF's post-second review raised concerns about the election-related spending could derail the program. Let's hear from one investor who has been speaking at the stakeholder engagement at the mid-year budget review.
Because if you went off
the assumption that you would get the money, it won't come. And you end up with a much larger fiscal deficit gap than we all envisage. Okay. And finally, the point on market confidence around T-bills being restructured or not is evident on what happened in the domestic debt exchange. Once you buy the security, you are at the mercy of the state infrastructure when it comes to restructuring. So the moral situation or the regulatory constraints, Bank of Ghana putting out that regulatory guidance that said you apply 100% risk weighting on the old bonds, literally coercing every financial institution to restructure their securities. That same card can be played in treasury bill restructuring in the future. And every bank board of governors is looking at that scenario. The risk of default of domestic market is now on the table for every institution. In terms of financial risk management.
And that is an investor sharing some concerns about government maintaining the needed fiscal discipline in the election period. Now, loan-related concerns by consumers and borrowers topped the list of complaints received by the Bank of Ghana for last year. Now, that's according to the 2023 Annual Complaints Management Report released by the Central Bank. There is more in this report.
According to the 2023 Complaints Management Report by the Bank of Ghana, despite the fall in the number of complaints recorded, complaints continue to increase in complexity, thereby requiring more time for resolution. Out of the 695 complaints, 458 were resolved and 237 remain unresolved as at the end of 2023. The complaint resolution rate of 66% was a marginal improvement over the 64% achieved in 2022. Meanwhile, email was the most preferred channel for lodging complaints, accounting for 42% of the total number of complaints reported to the Bank of Ghana in 2023. This was followed by walk-in with 26%. According to the 2023 Complaints Management Report by the Bank of Ghana, email was the most preferred channel because it afforded complainants a more convenient means to provide supporting documentation for their complaint.
That is the Business Desk Report. Let's now turn our attention to the stock market. And if you're a holder of MTN shares, well, the value of each share that you are holding has gone up by 9 pesos and is now worth 2 Ghana cedis, 10 pesos. Enterprise Group was up by 5 pesos to close at 1 Ghana cedi, 37 pesos. Now, if you had invested on the Ghana Stock Exchange from the beginning of the year to now, your returns is now more than 30%. Now, that is way, way better than what you're getting on other investment instruments on the market. And that's all for Business on Newsnight.
Joe, thank you very much. We can do some sports now.
Hello, Mr. Conte.
Hi, Evans. Will you believe that a parliamentary select team captained by MP for Ododo Ni Lanti Vanderpoel were 3-1 winners.
3-1?
Yes.
That's a miracle.
That's a
How did that
miracle.
Happen? Did you watch the game?
I'm surprised myself. Yeah, they beat Black Stars legend team in the curtain raiser of the Maiden Democracy Cup earlier today. Now, Patrick Boachi Yadom, MP for Obuasi, he scored the opening goal for the parliamentarians before ex-Black Stars midfielder Suli Muntari equalized through a free kick. Then parliamentary staff member Faisal Abubakar then added 2 goals to secure the famous result for the lawmakers.
Did you say staff?
Yeah.
What do they do? What does he do? Which department is he? Did they say?
They just called him staff.
There's no rented player, eh?
No.
Okay.
No. Right. But MP for Enshire, so Stephen Amwa, South Tong MP, Kwabena Woyomi, and then Tamale South MP, Haruna Idris, were all in action for the parliamentary select team. So, to be frank, the MPs were majority of the team.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
they
that's
did
nice.
Really well. They seem very fit.
Wow.
I see. Fit, yeah.
Nice.
Obviously, they're in the wrong profession. They should have played for the Black Stars. They may have won the World Cup.
Haven't
possibly,
Idrisu, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, possibly even won an African Cup.
But to be frank, Patrick Boachi Yadom's first touch is elite. Better than Lukaku.
Oh, that's so true.
By far.
But no wonder they criticize the Black Stars the way they do when they get the opportunity.
They have every right
to consider what we saw earlier today. But Manchester United are set to sign 18-year-old French centre-back Lenny Yoro from Lille for about 50 million euros. Yoro completed his first part of his medical earlier today and is expected to be announced in the coming days. 38-year-old Luka Modric has signed a 1-year extension with Real Madrid, which will keep him in the club until 2025. That's all for sports. Back to Evans.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Danny Cranting. Let's do the Supreme Court. Let's head to the courts now. And the anti-LGBTQ bill will remain in Parliament for a while longer as the Supreme Court has deferred its ruling on an interlocutory application that aimed to prevent Parliament from transmitting the bill to the President. So the two applicants, Richard De La Skye and Dr. Amanda Odoi, contend that the bill breaches some provisions of the Constitution and should not be transmitted to the President. So the five-member Supreme Court panel chaired by Chief Justice Getro Tokonu, in deferring its ruling, indicated that it will give the decision in the injunction application and the substantive application together in an early trial. Richard Kojonyaku is still around. He's been monitoring this all morning, still here with us in the studios. So Richard, let's talk about the reasons the court gave in advance in arriving at this decision.
So the court said that if it does a composite ruling, the interest of justice will be better served.
Substantive suit together, enabling this court to deliver a more informed, comprehensive, and just decision that accounts for all relevant circumstances and factors in this important matter. Such a unified approach will further provide context and clarity and also afford a clearer understanding of the issues raised in this interlocutory matter and their impact on the main suit. Having therefore diligently analyzed all the material processes on the record in this instant application and listened to oral submissions by learned counsel for the parties, our decision is to reserve our verdict on the interlocutory application until the final determination of the substantive suit, at which point we will render a comprehensive judgment that addresses all aspects of the case, including the current application for injunction. In conclusion, the decision of this court on this application for an interlocutory injunction is hereby deferred to abide the outcome of the determination of the substantive suit.
So, Richard, does it mean that Parliament can now transmit the bill to the presidency?
No, the bill still remains in Parliament until a final determination of the substantive matter has been determined.
Once that, the court says can be better dealt with in a substantive action. And it's permissible for a court to do that. There's nothing unusual at all. The court actually referred to an existing rule on injunctions. And so that, I think that the court is fair in coming by that approach. I mean, if as at this stage, the process have not been transmitted, and there must be a reason for that. The reason is that there was this application for interlocutory injunction pending, and the court has still not disposed of the application for interlocutory injunction. The court said the determination of that application for interlocutory injunction should abide the determination of the main case. And for that matter, it is reserving its determination until the main action is heard.
That's the Attorney General. Go Freddy Boadami.
Let's talk about the latest Afrobarometer report. And it has positioned Ghana among countries in Africa, witnessing a significant and continuous dip in the democratic scorecard. Now, this trend is because of the current economic crisis, corruption and mismanagement, which is breeding anger and disaffection, especially among the youth. The director of survey at the Afrobarometer, Boniface Dulani, who made these staggering revelations, recommended immediate pragmatic measures to avert a Kenya-like situation in Ghana.
The youth, I think, are more dissatisfied with the democracy, and they also are more inclined to support authoritarian forms of government, especially military rule. I think part of the problem here and the challenge, especially for the youth, is that when you also ask our respondents, what are the most important things that they want governments to be addressing? And unemployment is, I think, a big, big problem, and especially for the youth. So they are looking at alternative forms of government that can help to deliver on their needs, and especially on creation of jobs.
Specifically to the countries, you made mention that some countries are seeing a dip in democratic scorecards, specifically Ghana. Tell us what the situation actually is on the ground.
Well, of course, I mean, this is a very big continent. So as the report highlights, there are differences from country to country. Some of the countries like Ghana, we've seen a huge drop in satisfaction with democracy. And I think the reasons, as we know many of them, the economic situation in Ghana in recent years has not been particularly great. The youth have, as I've already said, like their colleagues elsewhere, are not happy with the amount of jobs that are being created. So most youth are going to attend the higher education, and then when they complete higher education, you find that there are no jobs to absorb them. But they are also really disillusioned by the high levels of corruption. So on one hand, governments are telling the people that, look, brace up for these tough times, but then they look at the political leaders are not themselves really demonstrating that they too want to live that kind of life that they are also sacrificing.
So what should be done immediately?
I think it is important that governments really listen to the voices of the people. And that's what Afrobarometer is trying to do, to make sure that the voices of ordinary citizens are heard. Because if governments don't listen to the people, then the people will vote out the governments, or as we've seen, I think people will be looking at alternative forms of government.
That's the director of survey at Afrobarometer, Boniface Julani. Well, there's also an advice by the immediate past EC chairman for Malawi, Dr. Chifundu Kachale, advising the Electoral Commission of Ghana not to take the findings for granted. Well, today we've also been hearing from the EC chairperson herself. The Democracy Cup was presented to her earlier today by the leadership of Parliament. This is what he had to say to the various political parties.
We're all mindful of the fact that we stand at the dawn of yet another election, the 2024 general election. And therefore, this initiative to promote and trumpet peace in Ghana across the 16 regions of Ghana is a laudable one. We applaud the speaker and the leadership for the Democracy Cup that will culminate in the playing of a football match this afternoon at the Accra Sports Stadium. And I believe the essence of the CAP is to demonstrate to the citizenry, and particularly the youth, that elections is also a contest. And at the end of the day, parties put in their very best, but at the end of the contest, at the end of the match, one emerges the winner. And just as the football match is conducted in an open and transparent manner, so are the electoral processes of the Electoral Commission of Ghana. From the very beginning, the registration through to the collation and the declaration of the results, our processes are also undertaken in an open and transparent manner, involving key stakeholders, i.e. the political parties, the security agencies, and the citizenry. And it is also done in an open and transparent manner. And so just like the football match, we serve as the midwives that birth the elections. We are the referees that conduct and that lay the election and the processes that lead to, the election day itself. And so as referees, we are committed to, ensuring that our activities from now in the lead up to the election and all our electoral processes are transparent, they are open, they are fair.
And that is Madam June Mentzen, the chairperson of the Electoral Commission.
And tonight we are looking at Health Manifesto, the big focus on PM Express.
Oh, yes.
On the Joy News channel.
Yeah. Mr. Ponsiru is going to be our main, he's going to present this with me. Okay.